Good early morning, Sunstoners. Very good to see you here. If you prefer a little more intimate surroundings, you're very welcome to come forward and sit on the front row like all good Sunday schoolers do. My name is Ardeen Watts. It's my privilege to introduce this session. I had occasion yesterday attending another session to reflect on dreams. My worst nightmare, and it recurs with some frequency, is finding myself walking out on the stage in front of an orchestra and not having the slightest idea what the program is. And I have to ask the concertmaster when I get out, what are we playing tonight? And so I know a little bit about panic. And we're going to have a musical introduction, a musical door opening to us, or opening into the realm of anxiety, fear, and panic, which is not entirely attached to music alone. Any of you who have done things publicly know what it means to reveal yourself a little bit beyond your comfort zone. And we will hear a personal story this morning from Phyllis Baker, and eventually some music from the Phyllis Baker Piano Trio, which features herself on cello, Marianne Morgan on violin, and Alan Eastman on piano. So without further ado, I will turn the microphone over to Phyllis, and at the end, if you care to engage in discussion, please feel free to come up and use the microphone to ask questions. Thank you very much. Phyllis Baker.
Thank you, Ardeen. Ardeen Watts is one of my heroes. And I was very pleased to learn that he would be introducing me. One of my dreams that I didn't share with anyone for years and years and years was a dream of me being alone on stage playing the cello, and I finish and everyone is just wowed. They just think I'm great. A couple of years ago, I decided, for a lot of years, I used to pray, God, you find me a place to play and I'll be ready for it. Well, nobody gets asked to play solos. So I decided I had to give my own little recital, which I did. Most of you out there are my friends or family, but if you're curious, if I've ever had a stroke, no, I haven't. I had Bell's palsy, and I was one of the lucky people that was left with permanent damage. But it's just a minor annoyance. For about the first 4 years, I didn't smile because it's a weird smile. And then I decided, what the hell? I smile anyway. You may or may not have noticed that I'm short. And I have small hands. And the cello is a big instrument, and I had always wondered if it would be easier to play a smaller cello. Actually, I should have taken up the flute, but I didn't. So I rented a half-size cello, and it didn't seem to make any difference. And it wasn't my cello. I didn't have that relationship with it. I didn't know how to make it speak. So I took it back. As it says in the program, I was an extremely shy, timid child, afraid to say boo to anybody. And when I started learning the cello in the fourth grade, it came fairly easily, and it became my voice. It became a way for me to be noticed. It was a way for me to say, I'm here and I count. And that was delightful. When I reached high school, I started taking private lessons, and my teacher, Virginia Slavich, was as bohemian as her name. And she had long, wild, red, curly hair. And she smoked anytime she wasn't playing the piano or playing the cello. She would always try to impress me and my mother. What a wonderful teacher she was. Lessons only cost $5 at the time. And she was always trying to impress me by how well her other students were doing. But she very rarely told me how well I was doing. And unless you get positive feedback, you don't really know. Let me stop and add, I tried to write all this down. I'm always impressed with the speakers at Sunstone who have their talks written out and they can read them and everything's organized. And it was really hard to sit down and write down everything I wanted to say and thought might be useful to you. And so in the end, I decided to just wing it. When I was in high school, I started playing in the California Youth Symphony, which was not affiliated with any public schools. It was just a youth symphony that drew musicians from all over the Bay Area. And the conductor, Aaron Stinn, had learned violin in Russia. And he was really a taskmaster, expected everything to be perfect. And his violin students did scales and technical studies. He wasn't very much into learning simple tunes that you play for your grandmother. He thought that was useless. And in orchestra rehearsals, he could be really frightening. If we didn't play things to his liking, he'd call us peasants. And that was the worst thing he could think of. That was a real insult. And his face would turn red and this vein would pop out on his forehead. And he'd mutter to himself as he stomped off the podium. It was like he'd been personally offended by our whatever we had done. And it's really intimidating. And so how you cope with that is one thing you do is fake it. You learn how to fake it. Because he looks around the orchestra and he says, who played that note? Or who played during that rest? And the orchestra players, you don't want to give it away that it might have been you. And you're so scared it might have been you without you even knowing it. And so your face goes blank. You don't want to betray yourself that it might have been you. So you get into this habit of kind of shutting down your emotions somewhat, which is not good for a musician. You need those emotions. And it was in the orchestra that I learned how scary 16th notes were. In some orchestral pieces, those 16th notes just go by so fast. You can't even see them. And you go home and work on it, and you try to learn all the notes and then go back to rehearsal, and you still can't do it. And so I would go back to my teacher, Mrs. Slavich, and say, I need to learn to play 16th notes fast. And she'd say, you think playing fast is so great? Everybody thinks playing fast is so great. It's not. You know what's hard? What's really hard is playing slow. She says it takes so much strength. She says, I don't think you have the strength for it. Well, one of the pieces she really, my mother wanted me to learn was the swan. The graceful swan gliding across the lake slowly without any ripples. And Mrs. Slavich says, well, I don't know that you can do that, but we'll work on it. So I did learn the swan, and I learned those silly little songs you play for your grandmother that Mr. Sten so disapproved of, but that's what we learned. So now I'd like to play you three pieces of music from this time period in my life. The first one is Berceuse from the opera Jocelyn. Berceuse is a lullaby. And all these years, I assumed that this song was a mother talking to her child. I went to the library and tried to find a libretto of Jocelyn and was not able to. All I did find was that it was a song written for a tenor. So it wasn't a mother. It was maybe a father. And it begins with a section that's called recitative, which is as if speaking. It's something you hear a lot in operas, and we also hear it in The Messiah, and Suddenly There Was with the Angel a Multitude, or with the Shepherds a Multitude of the Hosts, praising God and saying. And it's not very melodic, it's not complicated. It's just there. And as a teenager, I played it very flat. I couldn't relate to it. But now, at my age, I do very well on having been a mother. I know how to interpret it. The second thing I'll play is Tarantella, which is based on it's a folk dance form. The idea came from what happens when someone's bitten by a spider. They hop and jump and move very quickly, and it developed into this folk dance form. The third piece I'll play is The Swan. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I had, when I was in high school, I prepared a piece to record and send to BYU to audition for a music scholarship, but I chickened out and never sent it. But I did go to BYU and played in the Philharmonic Orchestra there. We had a very good conductor. He was kind of scary too, used those intimidation tactics occasionally that so the faking and the poker face continued. But it was then I learned the sheer joy of being part of creating a beautiful sound. It is so enjoyable. I think performing in a concert is much more enjoyable than listening to one. So I appreciate you coming here and listening. On 25 years ago, halfway into my marriage, we had a crisis, and I became angry at God. Instead of looking at how I had created the situation or how my husband had, I was just mad at God. I didn't know why he put me through that, allowed me to go through the pain I was suffering. And so I stopped praying, and I wouldn't pray at home, and I wouldn't pray at church if I was asked to. And I stopped playing music. I didn't play the piano, I didn't play the cello, and I didn't even sing at church. And I love singing. I love our hymns of worship. And I would just sit quietly at church. And that was a very hard time, not allowing yourself to worship in that way. It was very hard. And that lasted for 2 years. And it was a crisis of faith. And it was like everything I believed in was pulled out from under me. Not just the rug, but the ground. I was just free falling in space with nothing to hang on to. And I started reading voraciously. Probably didn't process what I was reading. I just was reading all kinds of church books, and I didn't find the comfort I was seeking there. And I began reading spiritual books by non-LDS writers. I looked for books by people who thought they had had encounters with Christ. And it developed into self-help books, and I realized I was codependent, so I looked at, I read books about codependency and self-help books, trying to figure out how I could make sense of my life and how I could find some joy in it. I had great kids, and they were a source of joy. And I'm probably still on that search, although eventually there's joy in my life now. I think when I married, and probably as many of us did, particularly, this was the late 60s when I got married, I saw my husband as, next to God. He was a returned missionary. He was he was just, I thought, pretty great. And I, no one had ever said, you know, there might be problems, and if you see these road signs, you might want to stop and think about what's going on. And of course, being married in the temple back at that time, I saw myself as being completely subservient to my husband. And I kind of lost myself. His desires became my desires. His happiness was my only goal, and whatever he said is what we did. And this suppressing of yourself is just not a good thing. And some of my reading brought me to looking at the shadow side. Of course, I don't have a shadow side, but I saw that in the music. It was those darn 16th notes. They were still a problem that I hadn't really addressed. And and that faking it, not being honest about who I was, not expressing what I was feeling, not allowing me to come forth. It's not a healthy thing. And so last winter, I decided to take a few cello lessons. Now they cost $50 a lesson. And I tried to address those 16th notes and a few other pesky problems that I had allowed to just remain. And I think the cello helped me bring out what I had kept hidden. I lived with my father the last 4 years as he was quite old and my mother was gone, and he needed somebody there with him. He wanted to do something for me to express his appreciation and offered to pay to have some work done on my cello. And so I took it to a violin maker here, and he did some work on it. And when I got it back, the two lower strings seemed to have opened up. They just rang more freely and more, I can't think of a word. And at the same time, I met my friend Ron, who couldn't be here today because he is ill. And I'm very grateful to Alan for stepping in at the last minute, and Marianne. But I met Ron, and he plays cello along with several other instruments, and he wanted to improve his cello playing. So we started getting together once a week, and we'd play cello duets, and then we'd play, he'd play the piano, and I'd play cello. And I had been buying sheet music for years as if I were going to play it somewhere. But I had never played a lot of it because I didn't have the piano half to go with it. So here was an opportunity to work with a pianist. And over time, my playing changed. I was able to kind of let go of the controls and bring out a more expressiveness to my playing. And I relate this to other areas of my life in that I'm no longer a shy person. I say what I need to say. I ask for what I need. And it's a much happier way to live. It's just been a real joy to develop in this way. I've become a more open person in a lot of ways, not just in playing the cello, and experiencing more satisfaction in my life. And I'm not mad at God anymore. Although he doesn't seem to speak to me, I don't have a lot of spiritual experiences, although I see playing the cello as a spiritual experience. God speaks through me, through the cello. And it's such an intimate thing. I am so glad that I have that in my life. I had originally called Dan Witherspoon to volunteer to play prelude music at a session or two, and he said, well, we've got all that taken care of, but if you'd like to do a session, we'd sure love to have you do that. And he said, you need to write out a whatever you call it, proposal. And so I did that and sent it into him, and he said, well, you need to be make it not so general and relate your music to the gospel and not in a typical cookie cutter way. Well, I don't think I'm a cookie cutter Mormon. I was inactive for 10 years. and my music is very much part of my spirituality. And this music I love is sacred music. But not even sacred music. My friend Ron said he played something in church one time. He couldn't recall what it was. And someone said to him, but that's not sacred music. Well, what do you call sacred? I had lived in Sandy in Boyd Packer's stake. And I think we were one of the first stakes that had to confine our special music and sacrament meeting to hymns or arrangements of hymns. And there's so much beautiful music to limit it to hymns. It's just limiting. So it's hard to define what's sacred. If it touches your soul and your heart, it's sacred. I would like to take the rest of the time doing 4 pieces of music. 2 of them are sacred. One is an arrangement of Did You Think to Pray by Larry Beebe. He makes really nice arrangements for hymns. And this particular arrangement was written for a violin and piano, and I transposed it for cello. And Ron said, well, maybe you better call Larry Beebe and make sure that's okay, because it says cannot be modified in any way. So I called Larry Beebe, and he was just delighted that I had transposed it, even would like to get a recording of it. And then after that, O Divine Redeemer, which is just a gorgeous song. If you know the words, you know the emotions that go with it. And then Oblivion by Astor Piazzolla, who is an Argentinian composer. The first time I heard this played, I thought, oh, that's just so beautiful, and it's hot and sensual, and I just thought, I've got to get the music to that. And I couldn't leave that off, because it touches me. And then the last thing is Albinoni's Adagio, which was originally written in A minor. It's been transposed to D minor for cello. In the Middle Ages, one of the ways they notated music is they would write out the bass line, and then they would notate the chords to be used on top of that bass line. Well, this Albinoni piece, Adagio, the bass line was written by Albinoni. And then the person at the harpsichord had to be really smart and be able to play those chords without them being written down. Well, this piece of music was taken from that bass line with the chord indications. It's a gorgeous piece of music. You may recognize that you've heard it before.
Thank you very much, Phyllis. Thank you, Alan and Marianne. This session is over officially. Thank you.